animals, and steam tractors. It's like stepping back in time.
Yeah, a lot of fun over there. Lots of old stuff to look at, old iron. It's 8 o'clock, and this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and the land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people powered into the future with your support now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Mostly sunny today, highs near 70 with southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20, and mostly clear overnight with lows 47 to 52 degrees. Coming up next, we've got news headlines from National Public Radio and then conversation about the weather. If you have a question for Bob, text us.
Live from NPR News in New York City, I'm Dwahli Saikautau. The control of Congress could rest in the outcome of primaries taking place in five states today. A tense and closely watched race is in Michigan, where four-term Congresswoman Haley Stevens, a moderate, faces progressive candidate Abdul El-Sayed, a former healthcare director. Both are hoping to reclaim the chamber for Democrats. NPR congressional reporter Sam Greenglass says he's also watching other competitive House seats.
It is also primary day in Kansas, Missouri, Washington, and Virginia. One race I'm watching is in the St. Louis area, where former Congresswoman Cori Bush is challenging Representative Wesley Bell from the left. Another test of how much an anti-establishment mood is powering this political moment.
NPR congressional reporter Sam Greenglass in Michigan. Authorities in Spokane, Washington have arrested a man suspected of arson in connection with one of three wildfires burning in and around the city. NPR's Kirk Sigler reports the blazes have burned hundreds of homes and displaced more than 60,000 people.
The Spokane County Sheriff's Office has arrested a suspect in connection with its investigation into the Old Trails Fire, the most destructive wildfire of the three burning in and around this eastern Washington city. Authorities say 37-year-old Aaron Farinacci, a convicted felon, was arrested at his home here without incident and is being charged with arson in the first degree. All three wildfires have displaced tens of thousands of people since last weekend and forced the evacuation of businesses, the VA hospital, and other healthcare facilities. Firefighters are trying to take advantage of a brief reprieve in the winds before another heat wave is forecast to arrive midweek. Kirk Sigler, NPR News, Spokane.
Federal prosecutors have dropped charges against three more people accused of damaging the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool. NPR's Rachel Treisman reports.
The Trump administration has long accused vandals of damaging the pool's liner, but the U.S. Attorney's Office for D.C. moved Friday to dismiss the case against a former Olympian who was indicted last month. Prosecutors said new evidence points to a rushed paint job. Then they dropped misdemeanor charges against three other people. Attorney Alan Dale represents one of them.
They're all charged with doing about the same thing, putting their hand in the reflecting pool. So how would you dismiss against one and not against all?
President Trump has since pushed back on prosecutors' assessment, continuing to blame vandalism. Rachel Treisman, NPR News.
The weekend rush of some 50 to 60,000 migrants from Morocco to the Spanish territory of Ceuta, which led to more than 70 dead, apparently began after false viral Instagram and other social media posts suggesting the border was opening up. This is NPR News from New York City. There's widespread fear that artificial intelligence is taking away people's jobs. But in Utah, Arizona, and Pennsylvania, a legal startup is using AI to help people overcome barriers to employment. NPR's Andrea Hsu explains.
Tens of millions of Americans have some kind of criminal record. This might be a felony, a misdemeanor, or even an arrest without a conviction. Still, any kind of record can scare off employers. Now, most states allow for some records to be sealed or expunged after a period of time, but the process can be expensive. Now a startup called Rasa Legal has whittled down the costs by using AI to figure out which records can be cleared and to draft court petitions. Rasa's founder, Noella Sudbury, says lawyers still review everything, but with AI,
we can scale our impact far beyond what would be possible if we were reliant on human beings.
So far, Rasa works in 3 states, but the goal is to go nationwide. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
The world's 3rd smallest country, the Pacific island of Nauru, population maybe around 12,000, has a new name, a truer native name, Nauero. Its people internationally will be known as De Nauero instead of Nauruen. The Republic of Nauero is only about 8 square miles and is threatened by rising seas. It was a former colony of Germany, then occupied by Japan, and later administered by Australia. It's been an independent republic since 1968. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, working to maximize the impact of charitable giving and to create customized philanthropic solutions. Learn more at fjc.org.
Good morning. It is 8:06 and you are tuned in to KAXE, People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota and beyond. So many folks letting us know what they are seeing in nature. This is Tuesday morning and we've got Tornado Bob coming up with the big weather picture. You can text us at 218-326-1234. Good morning, Chico, again.
Yeah.
Chico the dog in cotton.
Good dog. Sit. Yeah, we've got Monarda out in our rain garden looking full and heavy, and we got a few tansy out there. Where's my good friend Augie?
I know.
Augie, you and I need to go and...
He's on the boat right now.
Yeah, I bet he is. Well, next time you're in town, Augie, let me know, and we'll go out there and pull the tansy again. I also see what looks like some ripening high bush cranberry. Mm. Little red dots out there. I'd have to go out and make sure, but they're certainly looking like high bush cranberry from here. Be about the time of year that they would ripen. We talked about ripening berries. Raspberries are ripe right now. Pincherries, if you still have some, you better get after them. Juneberries, I have a juneberry in my yard that is a varietal, puts out lovely big fat juneberries. But they're done, and the birds have cleaned up every berry off of that bush that I didn't get. But as I was walking along one of my trails yesterday, I came across a juneberry bush that I have observed in the past. And this is a native bush out in the woods and not nearly as sunny, but it is covered in green fruits, and those will be ripening sometime this month. And hopefully I'll get a second whack at some juneberries. So... definitely August is the time to get out and sort of start harvesting some of your wild fruits. And as our question of the week is, you know, how do you do it? Heidi said that she went out and actually picked some blueberries and saved them. I almost never do that. I'm more apt to go out and eat the blueberries when I find them. So unless I found an incredible patch of blueberries, I probably would just, you know, pick the ripe ones and eat them.
Yeah, there was definitely so many in the patch that we had found. So we were able, I forget how, I'm used to picking raspberries. I forgot how time consuming, though, it can be to pick blueberries.
Oh, my.
You know?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm seeing a yellow, not the tansy, but a bigger yellow plant, kind of in the forefront of the high bush cranberry out in our rain garden. What is that? You see that?
Yes, I do. And unfortunately, it's a little bit blurry to me, but it looks like it could be one of the wild sunflowers. I probably have to go down and look carefully to see. But we have a few wild sunflowers that hang out up here. The one common one that is out there is Altissima. No, it's Gigantea. The tall. It's called tall sunflower. And sunflowers are kind of weird plants if you look at them. The leaves at the bottom can be opposite, and then as you ascend the stem, they can get out of sync and become alternate. So it depends on where you look at the plant, whether it's opposite or alternate leafed. One of the sunflower-like flowers that is about to bloom is Jerusalem artichoke, and that has opposite leaves, and the leaves on the Jerusalem artichoke are large. They're maybe 3 or 4 inches wide and 6 or 7 inches long, so they're a big leaf, not at all like the leaves of the native sunflowers. So just in case you're out looking, that's what you're going to find.
We have lots of folks. Don't forget about that Season Watch Facebook page as well. So many people posting pictures and asking questions there. It's always going on. Mark had posted a picture. He said, found several of these while snorkeling around a beaver lodge. They're on the tips of the branches in the beaver's underwater larder, a bit bigger than avocado. The inside is very clear, dense gel-like material. Any ideas what this is?
Oh, my.
And
wow,
the people were responding saying it's a birch leaf.
I'd have to have a better look.
Yeah.
It did look, a bit like that.
It almost looks like a leopard print on
it. Yeah, I don't think that's a birch leaf at all. I think that's maybe one of the, I think they belong to a group called Bryozoans, which are maybe sponge-like. I don't know. There's
someone posting that as well. Okay.
Bryozoan?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I wish I knew more about them. I've seen them and observed them, but it's just not something that attracted my interest enough to go digging.
Beautiful.
I did learn the name, but that's about it.
Beautiful photo. Don't forget, you can text us as well, 218-326-1234. We would like to thank our business supporters. And
yeah, we're here where it says donating stocks and mutual funds is a quick and easy way to support KAXE's future. You may receive tax benefits as well. Call Sarah for details, 218-326-1234. I have done that. I have a minimum yearly dispersal required. And if you take that amount and give it to somebody like KAXE, the whole dollar amount goes to them. If I wanted to take that money for myself, I would have to pay taxes on it at about 20 or 25%. So I like to do that. I like to take that money and just give it to KAXE because I can do it they can get the whole amount. We receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com.
It is time now to talk weather. Tornado Bob, Bob Konzemius joins us in the studio. Good morning, Bob. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm still here. Good for me, bad for them, whoever they are. So, a little bit of rain last night, and apparently the storm system must have been near me, but not on me.
Okay.
3 miles away, they were getting up 89, 90 hundredths of an inch. Uh-huh. At my house, I got 53 hundredths.
Okay.
But I had one crash, boom, lightning flash and thunder that were pretty immediate.
Okay.
And shook me awake and woke up the dog. Fortunately, my dog isn't afraid of that sort of thing, so she didn't like climb up on the bed with me.
Okay.
But she did wake up. We both woke up and kind of looked around and went, that's interesting. Yeah, what'd you get?
0.74.
Oh, you did all right.
Yeah. Pretty average, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it looked like...
for the area.
Yeah, looking around.
Local area.
Yeah, most of the people that I checked were in the 7 to 8, 9 tenths of an inch rain.
Yeah.
So,
Okay.
A good storm, what we needed. I had 4.07 inches of rain for the month of August.
July.
July, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that exceeds the average by a few half of an inch or so.
Yeah, maybe a little
not
bit.
Not much.
Yeah.
It would be close enough to average to call it an average month.
Okay.
But June, 7/10.
That was it?
That was it. And May was 2 point something. We've been on the low side coming in.
Yeah.
And a lot of discussion about drought. Are we still in drought even with our rainfall?
The drought monitor, people that UNL, Nebraska, Lincoln, I think, they have us in a severe drought, actually. So hydrologically, things are, we haven't caught up from a few years of deficit.
Right.
And we started out kind of spring was dry, and maybe we've been a little bit lucky this summer in getting some rain locally here when our surrounding areas haven't had as much. But we've been in severe drought for a while. What's classified as severe drought, but that area has expanded over a good chunk of northern Minnesota.
Yeah.
Now this summer hasn't been as dry as previous summers. We're getting closer to average. I mean, we're a little bit below average, but not by that much.
Right. I think last year overall, were we in the 7 inches below average, something like that last year? 25 or maybe it was 24. Dry anyway.
Yeah, it was dry.
Too little rain to make a difference. I like the way you've organized them to come through at night so that my days are sunny and warm and delightful.
And there's some breeze now,
yeah,
too. That's nice.
Yes.
Well, when the cold air comes through, there's a breeze. So
cold.
It takes the, you need to do the advection part, the moving of the air.
Advection.
So the cold air moves in. Yeah, advection. Some physicists call it convection, but in meteorology, convection means overturning vertically. And advection is transport pretty much horizontally from one spot to another.
Ah, okay.
Although it could be maybe vertical as well in some scenarios, but generally convection is overturning vertically, and advection is you're moving different air mass characteristics around.
Interesting. So I'm standing outside and the wind is blowing. How do I know if it's advection or convection? I mean, if there is convection, this turning over of the atmosphere, would there be wind associated with it? Would it blow my skirt up?
Probably.
Yeah. I'm going to have to start wearing a skirt.
Right.
A kilt, I guess they call it.
Kilt.
Yeah.
So,
on the ground, you wouldn't know if it were convection or advection without some additional information.
It's pretty local. Yep. If it's windy from the northwest and it's cooling off, that would be cold air advection.
Yeah.
And if it's southerly wind, it's getting warmer and more humid as time progresses. You're saying, oh, was this warmth and moisture advection?
Ah, okay.
And what else? What other types of advection would there be? That's pretty much it.
Okay. So you're not likely to
smoke advection. You could say the air is getting smokier. It just wind switched from the west and it's getting smokier. We have smoke advection.
Yeah. Are we having smoke advection now? The other night I was out and noticed that the moon was not quite its usual bright white self.
The past few days we've been getting our smoke from the West Coast, like Washington and Oregon.
Okay.
Those are where the biggest fires have been coming from, the biggest amount of smoke. And if it's from the west, the way air masses work in North America is if they're coming from over the mountains, we usually have elevated smoke. Like, it's not, the smoke is aloft, it's not at the surface. So the low-level air quality might be fine, but you see really smoky, hazy skies. And that's kind of what we've had for the past few days, although I've smelled smoke on a couple of occasions, but it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
If you get it from someplace more locally, then it tends to be more at the surface. So like for the boundary, example, the boundary waters fires, when those affected us, it was low level, you know, surface smoke.
Yeah. And the same was true of the Canadian wildfires. Well, I guess it was boundary waters and Canadian wildfires.
Yeah.
That had us kind of choked in there in
Minnesota and Ontario, and we had winds from the northeast, and there were several fires, you know, pretty much lined up from in an area from southwest to northeast, and all that smoke was coming right at us.
Boy, was it ever. I think I've not seen air monitor numbers like that. I think one day I looked, and it was 556.
Yeah.
And then several days later, when things had cleared out, it was down to like 15 or 20, and I was like, wow,
yeah,
could change that much.
So yeah, and then northwest, yeah, areas west and northwest of us, where we get a lot of our smoke from and northwest winds like today, I haven't seen much up there for fires. I didn't check this morning before I came in, but that area has been okay. The far northwestern part of the continent, over Alaska, maybe this extends over to, Nunavut and northern British Columbia. It might be that those places have had slightly cool weather this summer, and it hasn't been the weather hasn't been as conducive to wildfires. That's another check I'll have to make, but I have a friend of mine who lives in Fairbanks, and not only did they have a cold winter this past winter, but this summer it hasn't gotten very hot.
Hmm.
I think their hottest weather they've had is like 80, hottest temperature is like in the low 80s this summer in Fairbanks. And they can get warmer than that. They can get up into the 90s,
Does that have some effect on us?
Usually if they're, maybe if they're cold, on the cool side, we might be getting more of a ridge. It's usually Alaska has, with weather patterns, Alaska is often having the opposite weather that we are, particularly in the winter. So if they're really bitterly cold, we are often having rather mild conditions here and vice versa. So the winter of 2014, where we had really cold weather, I was up in Alaska and I spent a week up in Fairbanks area, and it was really bitterly cold down here, but it was really quite warm up in Alaska.
I remember temperatures
up in the 40s.
Yeah. Alaska was hovering around freezing, and we were far from freezing. We'd had to warm up 30 degrees to get to freezing.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've got a question. We're moving into August, and mm-hmm. August is sort of the last of the meteorological summer.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that happens as a result? I mean, is there a weather pattern shift, or is there anything that if you were just dropped here and you started taking data, would you be able to tell that it was August because of certain signs? Are there things that happen in August that set August apart from other months?
August is very similar to July, really.
Yeah.
End of July, end of July versus August, the weather isn't greatly different, but it does start to cool off slightly because we reached our peak sunlight in around June 20th or 21st. Mm. And the peak temperature lags that usually by about a month.
Right.
So late July is when our temperature on average peaks. This year we had probably our warmest weather, maybe in mid July, there's some parts of June that were kind of warm too.
Yeah.
Or 2 days.
Mid July was sort of the big one for me.
Yeah. So, and I had my thermometer had, 98 as hot as 98 that in mid-July.
I might have had something in that neighborhood as well. I haven't looked very closely.
But anyway, August, maybe you start to feel a little cooler at night. The light nights are getting longer, more time to cool off. That's what I usually see. I don't know. If you started looking at the temperature, yeah, you'd see a little bit of a cool down. Although it's very subtle difference between, you know, July and August. But that by the end of August, it starts to get noticeably cooler most years.
Yeah. Well, I think of the same thing in winter, where January tends to be our coldest month, and then you go into February, and February can be just as cold as January, but yeah. By the end of February, you're sort of moving into that a little bit warmer, a little more sunlight, so it's kind of it's that lag on both ends, you know, spring, yeah. Summer and winter.
Yep.
We got some reports coming in on the text line, 218-326-1234. Bill in Wabana, 0.9 inch of rain at Blue Water.
Yep.
Susan from Cotton, 0.42 in our gauge with lots of lightning early this morning, and we made Chico's day. Dog.
And Paul Hansen from up on Smith Lake sent in a note saying they got an inch up there, which would have been a few miles north of Bill and Blue Water.
Yeah, 0.4 of an inch of rain at our house last night is what I'm hearing.
Okay.
And then we also got photos of the 7 gallons of blueberries Noah and Britt.
Wow, Noah, 7 gallons.
Yep.
Mercy.
Yep. So good to hear from you all. You can continue to text in to 218-326-1234.
I don't think I could eat 7 gallons of blueberries at one sitting.
No.
Preserves he's making, he said.
He's making preserves. Well, let's go visit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's have pancakes. I'll have some of the blueberry preserves, if you please.
Yeah.
I remember fishing in Canada with my good friend Greg Winkler, and we were not having any luck fishing. We noticed on the shore that the forest floor looked kind of blue, so we ran our boat in there and discovered blueberries like I have never seen. You could pick one of those 5-quart ice cream buckets full without really moving. I mean, just turning in a circle and maybe moving 3 feet and turning in a circle, you could easily fill one of those things. And we came home with... Well, it wasn't 7 gallons. We had 2 coolers full, and I think we ended up with, 47 quarts. So it was, that'd be 10 gallons, 10 and a half, 10 and three quarters gallons, something like that. Lots of blueberries, but the fishing was, you know, and when you're that far from civilization, and this was in the day before cell phones, there was no distractions. It was just kind of like, let's go pick blueberries. So we did. Yeah, great times. Yeah, back to Bob and the weather.
So
what's in store for us? Yeah, more of this.
That big upper level ridge is going to be a little bit more at bay the next week or two, which means maybe a few more breezes. Not so still like it has been. There's barely been a breath of wind the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
And the people complaining that it's too windy haven't been telling me that it's too windy.
Ah, good.
So
good.
It must be not windy.
Glad to have you not on that hook.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It never ends.
It's too windy. It's not windy enough. It's too wet. It's not windy. It's not raining.
No, today is windy. So if anybody calls or texts me and say, hey, it's Bob, it's wind. What's this wind? It got windier. then it is breezy today.
Yeah.
And then a little cooler.
You said this upper level ridge is at bay. Where is it at bay at?
It's kind of squashed off to the south and west.
Okay.
So the southwestern U.S. is still pretty hot.
Southern U.S. Western Dakotas, eastern Montana, hot.
Yeah.
They sort of expect it to be hot this time of year regardless.
Right, I'd say like Utah, Colorado, Arizona,
okay,
New Mexico, Way up that part of the U.S. is pretty going to be pretty hot still. Mm-hmm. But for us, in a little bit of a very broad trough in Canada, it'll give us a little bit more what we call, I call cyclonic flow. Like the upper level of winds are kind of turning a little bit counterclockwise. And oftentimes that can mean showery weather, periods of light rain. Nothing much for severe weather probably, but all it takes is a little bit of warm air advection, like we talked about, warm air and moisture advection coming in and giving us a chance of storms. But over the next couple of weeks, it doesn't look quite so hot for here.
I'll take that.
And it's August. It can still be hot, and it can still be hot in September.
Yep.
Occasionally, but less frequently.
And lest you take this cool weather as a sign, the lakes will stay probably at their present temperature for another month.
Wow.
Well, it'll be the end of the month.
Yeah, true.
Before they really start to cool down much at all. I know people who are, I like to swim really early in the morning. And they're like, how can you stand it? And I'm like, well, the water's the same temperature as it was yesterday.
Yeah.
The water's warm. Like, the air is cool. You have to, dry off in a,
where was I? So like at night, I was like the night before last, I was out, looking for northern lights.
How was that?
It was okay.
Okay.
I saw some, but, kind of slightly smoke obscured and then the moon came up. And then you get illuminated smoke, which kind of hides them. So I went home. But as the wind was blowing, it was kind of coming in from the southeast, pretty good southeast breeze. And you could feel when a little bit of that breeze came off the water, you could feel warmth and moisture hitting you. So that was interesting. And then yesterday, went swimming in the – we had a mountain bike practice started.
Okay.
Went swimming in the pit.
Ah, perfect.
It was like, clear water, and it wasn't very cold. It was like nice and refreshing, but not super cold.
There's a car in there, if you should ever get that far around the edge, that's in about 18 or 20 feet of water.
Oh.
And I dove down and I didn't climb in, but I checked the exhaust system and the engine. It's the alternator is still there. If you need an alternator from a roughly early 70s something or other.
Okay.
At any rate, at that depth, the water was cool.
Mm.
There is a thermocline there at about 15 feet, somewhere in that range. Where
you're probably one of those people who can just dive down without a snorkel or anything. Mm. In 20 feet of water and stay under there for 5 minutes.
I wish, if I had known then as a child or as a young person that you could actually train yourself to be able to do that, I would have embarked on that training because I absolutely love being underwater and holding my breath and being down there. And I can stay under pretty well for a old guy. I was swimming in the pit on Sunday and there were some divers in about 20 feet of water and I swam down and said hello.
Oh. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah. What are you guys doing? What's all that equipment you're wearing?
Yeah, why do you need that?
Yeah.
I can just swim whatever I want to. I have gills.
Right. I wish.
Yeah, no kidding, Bob. He does have gills. We heard from Pat and Zirkle, 2 inches of rain. Woohoo.
Whoa. I wonder if he's too close to White Oak, and that was actually lake water. That he 2 inches. That's a good, but that speaks to the nature of these summer showers.
Yeah, some of these areas can get quite a bit. The others might not. I'd give a little bit more spatial description of the rainfall variation. But the Duluth radar was down last night, so it wasn't operational. I think it's they had some part that went bad and needs to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what you just said? You'd give it a little more spatial.
Oh, a spatial description. So if you look at, if you have a radar app on your phone, at least I do have radar. I have Radar Scope.
Okay.
And I have a subscription that allows me to get more data and stuff. And rainfall, radar estimated rainfall on your phone or to look at it, and you can see how the precipitation varies from spot to spot. The radar estimates aren't always all that accurate, but they're within, you know, I'm going to say roughly well within 50% or 70, maybe 75%. Sometimes, a lot of times I see radar estimates say, like, for example, maybe an inch over my house, but I've only recorded 3/4 of an inch or something like that. Sometimes it overestimates a little bit, but you can get a look at see like, well, yeah, over looks like something hit Marcel pretty hard and they have 2 inches up there. And then I might have 1/10 of an inch at my house, you know, or my house. You see the variation in rainfall and how that, what it looks like.
Okay. That is Tornado Bob. Thanks for coming in. Big weather picture.
Yeah. And I'm seeing most of those rainfall reports out west of us now. So,
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I could post something.
Just did a quick search on Kokoros, and a lot of the rainfall in that area was totaling 85 to 90.
Okay.
Hundredths of an inch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we've got local news with the Up North Report, and then we are starting a new series about citizen scientists. We'll be talking with the Plinskys from Baxter, new segment produced by Mark Jacobs.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The Lake of the Woods County Sheriff's Office reports a woman's body was found after a search of a county park Friday. Deputies responded to a reported abandoned vehicle at Clemenson Rapids Park, about 8 miles east of Baudette, that afternoon. Baudette Fire and Rescue personnel located the body of 64-year-old Blossom Twielkowski of Baudette almost 3 hours later. She was the registered owner of the reported vehicle. In a news release, Sheriff Gary Fish says the incident remains under investigation pending a full autopsy. An Itasca County judge granted a lighter sentence than guidelines call for on Monday in the criminal vehicular homicide case against Cynthia Cindy Martin of rural Grand Rapids. Chelsea Perkins was in the courtroom.
Both the state and defense requested the downward dispositional departure with about 45 people in the courtroom. They say 66-year-old Martin is amenable to probation, has accepted responsibility for her actions, and has the support of friends and family. More than 35 support letters were entered into the record, including those of DFL politicians who have known Martin over her time in local party leadership. The presumed sentence for someone with no criminal history is 4 years in prison. The attorneys asked Judge Heidi Chandler to sentence Martin to 364 days in the Itasca County Jail. Martin will also serve jail time on every 4th of July holiday for the next 4 years while on probation. Martin hit 19-year-old Carter Hathcock on Highway 169 near Nashua over the 4th of July holiday in 2024. She left the scene and did not check to see what she had hit. Hathcock died because of his injuries. The teenager's father, John Hathcock Jr., gave a victim impact statement in the courtroom. He said his life and the lives of Carter's other parents, 14 nieces and nephews, and Carter's son were destroyed by the incident. He asked the judge to allow the case to go to trial before returning to the gallery in tears. Martin also spoke while crying to express her condolences to the Hathcock family, saying she thinks of Carter and their loss every single day. She said, quote, "I should have stopped. I should have done more. I deeply regret that decision." Judge Chandler expressed sympathy for Carter's family and noted the difficulty of the case for both prosecutors and the defense. Chandler says she believes Martin is regretful and has shown she meets the criteria for a lighter sentence. This comes despite a pre-sentence interview with Martin that the judge says cast some doubt on her acceptance of responsibility and left Chandler, quote, flabbergasted. Martin was remanded into custody to begin serving her sentence at the hearing's conclusion. Chelsea Perkins, KAXE News.
The Detroit Lakes School Board adopted a neutral stance on political issues at a recent school board meeting. The Detroit Lakes Tribune reports the formal motion ordered the removal of all materials not funded, sponsored, or authorized by the district at all school buildings, and specifically referenced items such as, quote, rainbow stickers, flags, and buttons. The rainbow flag is commonly identified with the pride movement around LGBTQ+ rights. The American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota responded to the district superintendent and board chair over the weekend, writing the ban will likely, quote, create a hostile environment for students in Detroit Lakes public schools. The nonprofit's letter encouraged the board to reverse the ban and respect the constitutional rights of students, teachers, and staff. Bemidji area schools took a similar stance in the 2023-24 school year. The Hubbard County Food Shelf is working toward a new building after its board raises $2 million. The food shelf's existing building in downtown Park Rapids is small, but delivers nearly twice as much food as the nearby Purim food shelf, which has a much larger building footprint. The Park Rapids Enterprise reports the proposed new building would allow for more storage of donations. The new space would also allow food shelf clients more of a grocery store style setup so they can select their own items. After nearly 40 years of serving the community on an all-volunteer basis, the Hubbard County Food Shelf is also exploring the possibility of having a paid director with a larger pool of volunteers. The org has raised more than $1 million to date. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our Music Phenology and Morning Show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 8:40. Thanks for tuning in. It's the Tuesday morning show here on People Powered KAXE. Coming up, we're talking citizen science.
Support for KAXE comes from Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com. And we receive support from the Minnesota State Fair. It's the Great Minnesota Get-Together, 12 days of food, entertainment, rides, animals, and family fun starting Thursday, August 27th through Monday, September 7th. More at mnstatefair.org.
We just got a text in to 218-326-1234. Monica in Turtle River is telling us that, like Noah demonstrated by gallons of blueberries, there are really great blueberry farms in our northern region. At Leaning Barn Farm in Esko is a great spot. Thanks, Monica. Good to hear from you this morning.
We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
It is time to talk citizen science. Today we're starting a new series, Citizen Science, Results and Opportunities in Minnesota. Our guest today, our KAXE members Leanne and Ron Plinsky from Baxter, and they're here to talk about the Minnesota Master Naturalist Program, and our producer Mark Jacobs as well. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
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 Morning. Well, Ron and Leanne, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the Minnesota Naturalist Program.
Oh, who starts? Okay, I can start. So when Ron and I moved to the Brainerd Lakes area in Baxter in 2013, we didn't know anybody. We joined the organizations that we knew would be fun and helpful for us in the things we like to do. So we joined the Northland Arboretum for one. And in the spring of 2014, they were offering a Northwoods Great Lakes biome course for the Minnesota Master Naturalist. And that's the first course that I took. How about you, Ron?
Well, I retired in 2018. And after watching Leanne go play every day, I was working from home. We're living here in Baxter and worked from home for about 5 years, and watching Leanne go play and explore and do her science projects, I thought it was time for me to retire. And so I took my first and only class, the Northwoods Great Lakes Biome, also at the Northland Arboretum in 2018.
Leanne,
so I have a little bit of background on the inception and history of the Master Naturalist Program in Minnesota. Can I share some of that with everyone? So in 2005, they were waiting for a grant through the National Science Foundation and through the University of Minnesota. So the program is sponsored solely now by the U of M Extension Division. The Minnesota DNR was a partner until 2017, but now the program is solely U of M Extension. And since their inception, 5,134 Minnesota Master Naturalist volunteers have attended a biome course, and there are three courses in Minnesota. So if you can picture Minnesota, the upper northeastern section would be the Northwoods Great Lakes, including the Arrowhead and the North Shore. And really, because of where Brainerd and Baxter is, kind of central Minnesota, we're actually in that biome, but we're also in the Big Woods, Big Rivers biome, which extends from the far northwest to the far southeast. And of course, would include Mississippi, St. Croix, Red Rivers, all the rivers, and then the Big Woods would be considered the deciduous forests of like central Minnesota, like the Nerve Strand, Big Woods, and whereas the northern Northwoods Great Lakes would be the coniferous forest. And then prairies and potholes is the third biome, and that is in the far southwestern part of the state. And of course, the tall grass prairies originally there, just a small remnant remains. And then the potholes are those shallow lakes that may or may not stay wet throughout a season, but they're kind of those shallow lakes, again, created through glaciation. Also, a few more statistics. 245 instructors have held more than 300 biome courses in all areas of the state. 270 sponsor organizations have hosted biome courses, advanced trainings, and volunteer opportunities. And Minnesota Master Naturalist volunteers have recorded 1,178,000 volunteer hours, with, of course, more being recorded every day. And then collectively, volunteer service across all categories has had a $35 million, 21,000 plus impact on Minnesota and its ecosystems. Personally, since 2014, I have logged 2,288.25 hours, calculated value of $69,117. And for 2026, I have so far logged just 117. It's kind of low for me this year. 117 hours and 22 hours of advanced training. And we can log our volunteer service hours into one of four categories. Participatory science, there's a lot of syllables in that one. but also, I still know this as citizen science or community science, which we're kind of focusing on, program support, education and interpretation outreach, and stewardship.
That's a little more.
Go ahead,
Rob. Folks that are folks listening in saying, boy, that's a lot of time and a lot of hours. I don't really have that kind of commitment, but I'm interested. How do I become a Minnesota Master Naturalist? Well, first would be going to the website, MinnesotaMasterNaturalist.org, and register. Our biome classes are set up throughout the state in different areas, and they can be held in two different type of scenarios. Many of them are held in the evenings, one or two nights a week for 8 weeks. The course itself lasts for 40 hours. Some locations put on a 40-hour class week where you would attend for the entire week, Monday through Thursday, in a 40-hour session. And these are often done at nature centers like Long Lake Conservation or Wolf Ridge. Those are really exciting because you really get to immerse yourself for a whole week. Now, if you don't have that kind of time or vacation, you can do the evening classes for 1 or 2 days a week. Again, there's a class coming up at the Northland Arboretum. I believe the registration is already closed.
No.
No, thank you.
that one's so open. That's
starting very soon, and that's a class that's 2 days a week, and it goes for 8 weeks. Once you take the biome course, beyond that, the requirement to maintain a Minnesota Master Naturalist rating is 40 hours of volunteer a year and 8 hours of advanced training. Many folks, like overachievers like Leanne, do many more than the 40 hours. But it's pretty easy to accumulate those 40 hours of volunteering throughout the year, whether it be a program that's held by the local chapters. We have a Brainerd Lakes Area Master Naturalist chapter that helps coordinate volunteer projects. We have monthly meetings outside of the summer months, and we'd welcome you to attend those meetings where we have presentations. But the program is really worthwhile. It may sound more daunting, just the phrase Minnesota Master Naturalist. People are like, ooh, that's big. That's a lot of time commitment, but it's really not. I myself have made many great friends since 2018 in the program, and we maintain strong relationships today with those very same people.
Is any of the work that is done by the Minnesota Master Naturalists, is it cataloged in any way? Are you keeping records of anything that would be something that you would pass on? Is that part of the citizen science of it?
Yes, there is a booklet that's available. It's a 12-page booklet. It's at the 20th anniversary of the Master Naturalist program here in Minnesota, and they have highlighted different volunteers focusing on a volunteer profile. They have a unit called the Rapids Lake Unit, which was a successful model for big picture planning and how the Master Naturalists were able to get a visitor center opened in this area. This would be part of the Minnesota River Valley, Minnesota River Valley National Wildlife Refuge in the Bloomington area. So yes, there's all of the hours, again, that volunteers have contributed are logged, and this helps the University of Minnesota Extension to receive more grants. For example, in 2011, they received a grant from the LCCMR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, to start the youth program for Master Naturalists, the Explorers Program. So again, I would hope that your listeners would understand the importance of receiving, or applying for and receiving grants to help them further their projects and their goals and aspirations for their particular program. It's really important. And one thing that Ron and I, when we give classes, because we're enthusiasts, we're not experts. This is a bit daunting because I don't have the credentials that, for example, Pam Perry has. Pam and Ken Perry were early friends of ours when we first joined the Bird Club. So here's, again, another example of how long-lived relationships are when you find your peeps. You find your peeps. But we're enthusiasts, and I always like to throw out the disclaimer. We've taken some courses. We've done lots of reading. And so we know a little bit about a lot of things. But I'm always afraid there's going to be that question that somebody's going to ask me, and I'm not necessarily going to know the answer. And I won't make something up. I'll just say, I'm sorry, I don't know, but let's look this up or let's find this out.
Always the case. I refer to it as aspiring Master Naturalist. I am an aspiring Master Naturalist. I hope to become a master, but I'm a long way from that.
Well, and also I tell people, okay, if you are curious, observant, and enjoy being outdoors, you are already a naturalist. So yes, maybe we've taken the courses to become a certified Master Naturalist, but everyone, and I think all of our listeners, everybody who contributes to Season Watch, these people are all naturalists already. I love that.
We've got Bob Gonzemius has consented to stay in the studio, and he's got a bit of citizen science that he's associated with. Bob, what have you got going?
Well, I was thinking about some Aurora, I guess the Great Lakes Aurora hunters, and some other people that are some other groups that. And these are actually some of the Alberta Aurora chasers up in Canada. But what these groups have all done in common is there's a citizen science going on there where people take pictures of the night sky with auroras and other things in it. And people were remarking, like, well, what's this feature here? And it was like a feature. It was like a narrow ribbon of what looks like it's glowing like kind of an aurora, but it's a slightly different color. It's more of a, you call it a mauve.
Mm.
That's what they call it. It's kind of, it might be have a reddish tint to it, but it's kind of like grayish. It would show up once in a while. And then sometimes next to it would be this, like these narrow green spikes, across the scale next to the ribbon. So I was like, well, what's going on there? Because like it's a different form of aurora. Well, those observations came along and there were people started hearing about those and it's like, well, why don't you tell us what time you took the picture and then we'll have other people, send in pictures. And it was they discovered like, well, okay, here's some satellite readings. This is going on. This is a different type, different feature that's going on. So, citizen science, people just submitting their pictures of the night sky kind of helped discover a new, phenomenon that hadn't been really recorded yet, and documented with, some satellite observations that were able to quantify what's really going on. It wasn't a typical, aurora where you have precipitating electrons. Electrons are coming out from outer space and hitting the upper atmosphere. This is more of just things are just heating up in a particular the southern limit of the equator limit of the aurora, and then there's some currents going on there still, and that's heating up the air, which is a different mechanism for causing this aurora like feature. So big discoveries sometimes get made with citizens helping out and collaborating with more well-educated scientists.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's what you guys, Ron and Leanne, that's kind of what you're doing is you're observing and every once in a while you come across something that's unexplainable or that you need to turn to someone up the chain, someone who has maybe studied a bit more than we have and get some answers.
You asked about data collection, and one of the things we highlight in most of our classes, as far as I know, is iNaturalist and how to use it. Folks can use it and do their own citizen scientists. They don't need a class. They don't be a master naturalist. Download the iNaturalist app. Leanne has held classes to help folks that are a little apprehensive in getting started, but we know that that goes into a huge database that scientists can use to watch throughout the nation and throughout the world on the iNaturalist app for sightings. People have questions. It will help you identify species. Folks will reply to your inquiry and tell you why it is what it is and why it is what it isn't. So I'd recommend the iNaturalist app for anybody that's interested in just learning more about things in their own yard even.
Yeah. I think a good point is made has been the community part, how it makes you part of it. I've been in Master Naturalist since 2017, and you become part of a community and with like-minded people. I also, every year I teach a forestry course at Long Lake Conservation Center to burgeoning Master Naturalists. They're so enthusiastic. They got tons of questions. It's kind of fun to present to people who actually are very engaged like that.
Yeah. You're also a member of COCORAS, if I'm not mistaken. And that's a citizen science group of rainfall. We check our gauges and report. And all of that data can be perused. It's all public data, and it can all be perused. And I think that's the beauty of citizen science. It gives some of us, folks who didn't have the courage to take those science classes, an opportunity to, you know, flex our science interests a little bit. So Ron, Leanne, Mark, thank you all. Bob, thanks for joining us this morning. Unfortunately, as always, time just flies when we get into these conversations. And thanks again for spending the time with us and maybe opening some eyes out there for people who might want to pursue whatever science interest they have.
Thank you all for what you do for nature.
We have a lot of fun, that's for sure.